Happy Halloween, everybody. It is Saturday, October 31st, 2009, episode 88 of The Sound Off here on sescoops.com. I am the Solemn Monster, and fortunately, not a whole lot of news going on this week. Nothing really happened, and so I guess we'll just start off here with thoughts on Brett. Oh, wait, there is something that happened. How foolish of me to forget. Yes, the big news story of the week is indeed, once again, dealing with TNA. I think I did a podcast last week with a lot of TNA news. So all these TNA people that have written into me in recent weeks complaining about the lack of TNA coverage have got to be doing cartwheels these last couple of weeks. I would be remiss if I did not lead off by talking about the fact that the single most popular wrestler in the history of professional wrestling and the single most recognizable name in the history of pro wrestling has signed with Total Nonstop Action. That, of course, would be the immortal Hulk Hogan finally signing with TNA. I say finally because Hulk Hogan had been rumored to have signed with TNA once before, many, many moons ago, and was about to embark on a feud with Jeff Jarrett. They shot an angle over in Japan where Jeff Jarrett broke a guitar over his bald head, and, of course, nothing ever came from it. Hogan claimed he had a knee injury and needed knee surgery, and a couple months later ended up back on WWE TV. Not the case this time. At least it would appear that Hogan is in fact on board, and he is really with TNA this time. And he's not coming alone. Eric Bischoff, who seemingly is connected to the hip of Hulk Hogan these last couple of years. Obviously, Eric and Hulk have maintained a solid friendship since the days of WCW. Eric is on board as well, and I'll get into all the little bits and pieces in a moment. There was a big press conference that was scheduled for Tuesday here in New York City at Madison Square Garden, specifically in the mall area of Madison Square Garden. I, of course, have a job, which a lot of people don't these days, for which I'm very grateful that I have one, and was unable to go to the press conference, which was really just supposed to be about the release of Hulk's new book, My Life Outside the Ring. And Hulk was going to be doing a Q&A session for the book with fans, wrestling fans specifically. And I thought it would be really neat. I grew up a Hulk Hogan fan, never really had a chance to meet the man. I've met pretty much everybody there is to meet. I've met Vince McMahon, I've met The Rock, I met Owen Hart less than a year before he died. Mick Foley, Sid, Shawn Michaels, Bret Hart, Ric Flair, so on and so forth. And I thought it would be kind of cool to finally get to meet Hulk, but alas, it was not to be. And I figured, it's just a book signing and some Q&A about his book. No big deal. Now, the day of the event, I began to hear some rumblings, a couple of reputable wrestling websites. Within 15 or 20 minutes of the start time of the press conference, started posting things about something big was about to be announced and this and that. And I actually had a friend who was going to be at the press conference and was at Madison Square Garden and texted me to alert me to the fact that he had either noticed or had been told by somebody else who was there with him that there was a banner in the area where the press conference was to have taken place that had both a TNA, several TNA logos and Spike TV logos on it. Now, what would Hulk Hogan be doing at a press conference with a TNA Spike TV backdrop? You put two and two together and people started to figure things out. I know that the people there weren't too happy that that got leaked, but they still did a hell of a job of keeping it under wraps because apparently Hogan has been in negotiations with TNA now for probably the last 2 months or so, and I have not heard word one. Even the most reputable of wrestling websites have not reported a single word about this because it was really just kept to Hogan and perhaps Bischoff and Dixie Carter and the lawyers and the people that had to know. The bookers and the wrestlers were not made aware, and certainly people like Vince Russo were not made aware of what was going on because Russo has bad blood with Hogan going back all the way to the WCW Bash at the Beach pay-per-view when Russo laced into him in what was supposed to be a work shoot that went a little overboard, and Hulk quite literally walked out of WCW, and there was a big lawsuit that was filed, and may well still be under litigation. In any event, Hogan comes out, Dixie Carter was in attendance, Jimmy Hart was there, Bischoff was there himself, and it was a whole big deal. And it really did rock the wrestling world. I mean, this is a big story, make no mistake about it. TNA is by default the number two wrestling promotion in the country, and a distant number two at that. Having a name like Hulk Hogan on board can be nothing but beneficial in terms of the name recognition that it will help bring TNA, because Hulk Hogan is more valuable these days, quite frankly, as a brand name than he is as an in-ring performer. Now, a damaged brand name, but a brand name nonetheless. I say damaged because Hulk has had a tough couple of years. I won't ever go to bed at night weeping for Hulk Hogan and the life that he leads and the luxuries that he lives with, but, you know, between the situation that involved his son and his friend, the Army vet, that was basically comatose after a car accident, and there's still litigation pending there as well, Hulk's well-publicized divorce from his wife, Linda. You know, in his new book, apparently, Hulk talks about a suicide attempt, which, you know, whether it actually happened or not, who knows? You know, this is Hulk Hogan we're dealing with here, but certainly it helped sell books, and it got him press coverage all week long on shows like Access Hollywood and Entertainment Tonight and Larry King, and he was on Jimmy Kimmel. So Hulk has been ramping up the promotion machine for his book, and then the TNA bombshell dropped. Now, I've seen people complaining about the fact that Hulk has been appearing on a lot of different TV shows and making radio appearances, and has, if he even brings up TNA at all, it's usually a fleeting mention for 30 seconds or a minute. And if I'm TNA, yeah, in my head, I'm probably wishing that Hulk would talk a little more enthusiastically, or talk a little bit more frequently about TNA, but it doesn't matter, because the initials TNA meant nothing before, and now they mean a little bit more than they did before, just by virtue of Hulk mentioning them even once. As long as TNA is mentioned, however brief the mention may be, that's publicity that you simply can't buy. You can't buy publicity like that on Larry King. You can't buy publicity like that on Jimmy Kimmel, because these people had no idea what TNA even stood for before. They probably thought it meant tits and ass, and now they know that it's actually another wrestling promotion that is in competition with Vince McMahon. And so in that respect, this is a big boon for TNA, a big positive in that respect. But of course, there's other angles to this story. And that is, of course, that Hulk Hogan and Eric Bischoff, especially working together, have quite a reputation for themselves as two people, and more specifically, in Hulk's case, somebody who is out for nothing but himself and his friends. Hulk will do more harm than good. If he has any booking power at all, he'll book himself and his friends to look strong. This is the end of TNA, the end of the youth movement, and so on and so forth. And I'm not going to sit here and say that that's completely false. We have to wait and see over the course of 6-12 months or so how this plays out. Now, the announcement was positioned in such a way that Hulk Hogan was you know, talked about as being in partnership with Dixie Carter and TNA, and that Hulk would be appearing on TNA television, but not necessarily appearing, at least on any sort of frequent basis, as an in-ring performer. And we all knew that, because even if Hulk Hogan had signed on simply as a wrestler and nothing more, Hulk Hogan is not wrestling every week on Impact like Mick Foley. We know this. His body simply could not handle it. But what exactly does this partnership entail? There's been a lot of different stories. There is no singular story that I can sit here as I talk about this and confirm to you as being correct. There are friends of Hulk Hogan's, most notably Bubba the Love Sponge, who is a popular radio show host. Why, I don't know, but he is popular. And Bubba is very good friends with Hulk. He has Hulk on his show quite a bit. And Bubba claims to have seen the contract that Hulk signed with TNA, and unequivocally states that Hulk Hogan is now in charge of TNA. He's got the book. He'll be calling the shots as far as who comes in and who doesn't and where things go from here. It was written into his contract. Hulk has 100% power and control in TNA. Now, I don't doubt for a second that Hulk has 100% creative control over Hulk Hogan. That's been the case wherever he's gone. He had that power in WCW when he signed his big contract in 1994. He had that power when he came back to WWE for his last one or two runs. 100% creative control, and nobody knows that better than Shawn Michaels. If you know the whole story there, going back to SummerSlam in 05, the plan was for there to be two matches with Hogan and Michaels. And, you know, Hogan would win one, Michaels would win the second one, I believe. And things didn't work out that way. Hulk decided just to have the one match at SummerSlam. He was going to go over clean with the leg drop, and that was going to be that. And Shawn Michaels came out the next night on Raw and pouted. and was very smarky in his remarks about Hulk Hogan, showing shades of the old Shawn Michaels, and he pouted, and I'm sure he stamped his feet because he had been out-politicked by the master politician that is Hulk Hogan. But again, Hogan has had that power for quite some time. Now, 100% control over TNA, that's a completely different story. And I don't buy for a second that Hulk has complete control over the company. Now, did Hulk buy into the company? I am led to believe that he has some sort of ownership stake in the company now, or he is a partner of some kind with Dixie Carter. Bob Carter, who of course is Dixie Carter's father, is the money behind TNA. He still has the power. That has not changed. The Carter family and their, you know, Panda Energy, they are the financiers of TNA. If they pull out, TNA dies. So that's where the money and the power really still lie. But how much power Hulk has is still up in the air. Like I said, Bubba claims that it's in Hulk's contract that he'll be booking and he'll be doing this and he'll be doing that. TNA sources, who talk to a couple of different reputable wrestling websites, have denied all of that and said it's all hogwash, it's not true. Hulk will be coming in. He'll be involved in different facets of the company. He'll be a spokesman, a face of sorts for TNA, and he will have some sort of authority figure role on the television show, but he will not have booking power. Things are not going to change. Vince Russo and Ed Ferrara are still the writers, and the young guys are still going to be on top, and so on and so forth. So you get two different stories, depending on who you talk to. But if you're TNA, you're going to deny that story anyway. So it is entirely possible that Hulk Hogan has some degree of booking power in TNA. And if that's the case, I question how long Vince Russo will still be there for. Russo is still the head writer. He was not fired. He has not quit. Everything seems to be status quo right now. But I just wonder, long term, even in just the next few months, if things may change. I just find it hard to believe that Hogan and Russo and Ferrara could coexist in the same power structure of the same company. That just, to me, has short-term arrangement written all over it. I mean, that's why Jim Cornette left TNA. Jim Cornette actually got fired from TNA, and he actually wrote a commentary in the last 2 weeks. If you go to jimcornette.com, it's very long and very detailed about his role in TNA from the very beginning until the point that he got fired. And how, you know, what his responsibilities in TNA were, and kind of stories about his day-to-day dealings with Vince Russo and how he tried to make it work, and it just didn't work. And it was basically a situation where TNA had to choose between Russo and Ferrara or Cornette, and we all know the choice that TNA made. And you know that because I commented on it on this show, and I called TNA a bunch of morons because they got rid of the wrong person. I would take Jim Cornette over Vince Russo any day of the week, but that's neither here nor there. Point being, there's still a lot of very interesting stories yet to play out in this TNA situation. This is far, far, far from over. And if Hogan is serious this time about being involved in TNA, and he's in it for, you know, he's in it to win it, so to speak, and he's not going to pull out in 2 months, there's going to be some big changes. Things cannot continue on as they are. Now, where Eric Bischoff is concerned, Bischoff is not, or has claimed that he is not, you know, joining TNA as a regular employee. He's not going to be on, you know, booking the show. He's not even going to necessarily be an on-air character. He is there with Hulk, more so to assist with alternate projects for the company. Bischoff and his partner and his friend Jason Hervey, who, you know, Hervey's been a wrestling fan for going back to the 80s. He played the older brother on that TV show, The Wonder Years, but he has been a wrestling fan and involved with Eric Bischoff for many, 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 many years, even going back to WCW. The two of them are going to be developing alternate TV projects, perhaps a reality show project for TNA. That's really their announced public job with TNA. That, of course, does not mean that Bischoff has no other involvement in TNA or won't over time. Just the mere mention, the mere notion of Hogan and Bischoff joining TNA in any capacity is a big, big story. Maybe the biggest wrestling story of the entire year. And it's very, very early, way too early to determine whether or not this is good or bad. I would call it nothing but good right now, just because of the attention that's being brought to TNA is the sort of thing that they have not gotten in over 7 years of existence. And they've tried to get Hogan for so many years. Now they've got him, so it's got to be looked at as nothing but a victory for TNA. But let's talk about this on the Sound Off in 6 months and see how these different things may be. people already joking around that, you know, it's only a matter of time before the Nasty Boys are the TNA Tag Team Champions and Brutus the Barber Beefcake is the Legends Champion and so on and so forth. And look, I will not fault Hulk Hogan for looking out for his buddies over the years. It, ridiculous as it may be, and I don't want to see Brutus Beefcake as a champion in TNA or the Nasty. Look, if he wants to give some friends a job in TNA, that's fine. That's one thing. I don't see the Nasty Boys being tag team champions and Beefcake being a champion and Hogan being the TNA champion. I don't see those changes happening. You know, and maybe I'm being too optimistic about this. Maybe I'm letting my Hulk Hogan fandom cloud my judgment. I look at this as a benefit right now for TNA. Hogan had a taped promo, I guess. I saw the highlights from the press conference that they aired on Impact that they inserted into the show this past week, and apparently Hogan will be on the show, I guess, in the Impact Zone next week. I believe they have tapings on Monday. And we'll see. We'll see what his involvement is going to be. If he's going to be some sort of... Maybe he'll take over the old Jim Cornette role of authority figure. Maybe it'll be something completely different. I don't know if he'll be wrestling at the Turning Point pay-per-view. I would be shocked if he did. I don't think he'll be wrestling in TNA until at least after the upcoming Australian tour. The Hulkamania Australian tour is still going to happen. It's completely separate from TNA. Hogan will be wrestling Ric Flair on those shows next month. I don't think he'll be wrestling for TNA before that. Now I mentioned Ric Flair. Ric Flair has been brought up a number of times. People have asked me, is Flair going to TNA as well? I know that Ric Flair was contacted by one of the wrestling websites, I believe it was PW Insider, for comment on the story, and he was asked point blank, are you going to TNA with Hulk Hogan? Flair did not say yes, but he did not say no. He basically gave a no comment answer, and I find that to be very interesting. Apparently, whatever deal Flair inked with Hogan and Bischoff to join them on this Hulkamania tour where he will be facing Hulk in a bunch of singles matches, it's a part of a bigger arrangement that he signed. It's some sort of 3-year deal where essentially he and Hulk Hogan are basically attached at the hip like Siamese twins on all projects for these next 3 years. So besides the tour, there was going to be the development of some sort of reality TV show that would follow Hogan and Flair, which has gold written all over it, but that's besides the point. Now that Hogan and Bischoff have joined TNA, it stands to reason that there's a pretty good chance if Flair isn't already on board that he may well be on his way to signing with TNA. The only reason Ric Flair has not signed with TNA to this point, since he retired from WWE, is because he has not wanted to burn any bridges with Vince McMahon in World Wrestling Entertainment. In fact, before he signed on for the Hulkamania tour, he actually called Vince McMahon. Now, this was against the wishes of Hulk Hogan and Eric Bischoff. They did not want him to call Vince. He said, I have to, out of respect. He called Vince McMahon, and Vince gave him his blessing and basically told Flair, make sure you get your money up front. And that was the end of that. Now, Flair joining TNA would be a completely different story than wrestling on some international tour. And it would no doubt be a... Now, look, you say burn bridge. Jeff Jarrett has a burn bridge with Vince McMahon, okay? There are people out there. Randy Savage apparently not only burned the bridge down, but just nuked the fucking thing. Ric Flair, I don't know that he'll ever truly burn a bridge where he can never go back to WWE, but Vince McMahon would not be pleased if Ric Flair signed with TNA. But I get the impression that Flair just doesn't care anymore. He is hard up for the money. He feels disrespected because, you know, WWE has not offered him any sort of contract. He wanted to come back and wrestle. They said no. He's not happy about that. And so if Flair is pissed off and needs the cash, I would not be surprised if he signed with TNA. The key here is that Flair has never even been open to a meeting with TNA officials, and I'm hearing now that he is at least open to a meeting. That's a big difference from 6 months ago. So Flair is not in TNA right now, but that could change in the next couple of weeks or even the next couple of months. But it is not official. He is not signed with TNA. Now, I mentioned on my Twitter page when all these stories broke that there was a bigger story yet to be told. And there is. There is at least one more big piece of news that we do not yet know about that has not been announced. I don't know if it's a done deal, if it's still being negotiated, but there is a bigger story here than Hulk Hogan signing with TNA. Now you think to yourself, what could be bigger than Hulk Hogan and Eric Bischoff signing with TNA? Think about that for a second. There are some things that could potentially be bigger for TNA than just signing Hulk Hogan. Now, Let the speculation begin, because I don't know what it is. Nobody seems to know what it is. They did a good job of keeping the Hogan stuff secret, and just like Shane McMahon keeping his whole situation secret, nobody seems to know anything with respect to what this next big announcement is. There's talk that perhaps there's other big wrestling names on their way in to TNA, but to me, that would be no bigger than Hulk Hogan himself. Not to say that there are wrestlers out there who are tremendous performers who could perform a hell of a lot better than Hulk Hogan in the ring, but you think of big name wrestlers signing with TNA, there is none bigger than Hulk Hogan. It's not going to be The Rock. It's not going to be Steve Austin. So who else is there? There's talk that perhaps Rob Van Dam could come to TNA. It's possible. It's something that Van Dam has not ruled out. But again, it's not a situation where he has signed. He could, but he has not yet signed. Jeff Hardy. Jeff Hardy has told his friends if he's going to go back and wrestle, which he has no plans of doing right now, he may as well do it for WWE because that's where he can make the most money. And, you know, I think Jeff has already been enough of a liability for his poor brother that, you know, him going to TNA would also kill Matt's career because that's just how vindictive that Vince and people in the wrestling business can be. So for his brother's sake, I think he would probably want to stay away from Orlando. So I don't see Jeff Hardy coming in. RVD is a possibility. People have talked about Bill Goldberg. Goldberg met with TNA in mid-October, a couple weeks ago, about coming in. They offered him some kind of deal, and Goldberg didn't flat-out turn him down. You know, Goldberg has said before he doesn't, you know, he's not going to wrestle ever again. How many times have we heard that from wrestlers? This time, Goldberg met with them and told them point-blank, if Vince Russo works for this company, I am not coming in. And that was essentially the end of that discussion. Hogan coming in changes the dynamic. If Russo's tenure now is short-lived, perhaps that opens the door for a Goldberg comeback in a couple of months. Again, this is all speculation right now, but these are the names that are floating around, and I'm just here to tell you that nothing is official. Do not believe anybody who says Goldberg is signed and they're just waiting to make the announcement, or Van Damme, or even Ric Flair. They may well end up in there at some point, but it has not been inked at all as of yet. Now, the biggest speculation on what this other big announcement could potentially be involves TV. And it involves the potential that TNA is either shifting Impact from Thursdays to Monday nights to compete with Monday Night Raw on Spike, or perhaps there will be another TNA show. Now, I can actually confirm that there will be a second TNA show. That's actually one of the things I think that Eric Bischoff is helping them with, is the development of a second TNA program. And perhaps if Impact stays on Thursdays, maybe there'll be a completely new show that airs on Mondays from 8 to 10, and there would be that one overlapping hour where TNA would compete with WWE, and, you know, it would be the comeback of the Monday Night Wars. Let me not fan those flames, but let me put them out. Because, first of all, it would be completely foolish of TNA to do this. I admit it would be very exciting. To have an alternate wrestling program on Monday nights to be able to flip, even if just during the commercial breaks. It would be very reminiscent of the Raw vs. Nitro days, and it would be a lot of fun for the fans, but it would be doomed for TNA. There has been at least two occasions in the past where TNA has aired on the same night as WWE. They aired Impact on a Monday night once, and they got fucking crushed. And I believe there was one night where Raw aired on a Thursday head-to-head with Impact, and Impact, again, got fucking crushed. And this wasn't all that long ago. This was not in the infancy of TNA. This was in the last, like, 3 or 4 years. They haven't grown that much in the last 3 or 4 years, unfortunately. So, they got Hogan, they got Bischoff, they may get a couple of more guys. You know, again, there's some other big announcements left to go. If I'm TNA, I ride this wave out. I try to improve my product, and maybe in a year or two. Let's see where the Hogan thing goes. You may be big enough where competing with Raw is still probably going to be stupid, but it may make more sense. To me, if they just move Impact to Monday nights now, they're just going to cut their audience at least in half, and their audience isn't that big to begin with. They get, you know, less than 2 million people that watch Impact each week compared to anywhere from 4.5 to 5.5 million who watch Raw. There's a pretty big difference there. But it's possible. TNA and, you know, Jeff Jarrett for years, that's all he wanted to do was compete with Raw. Jarrett, of course, is no longer in power. He is still with TNA. And in fact, Jarrett may have helped engineer Hogan first getting into talks with TNA. So Jeff Jarrett may not be displeased at this news, but he is no longer in a power position in TNA. For years, all he talked about was competing with Raw. And Dixie Carter has said that as well. That would be a goal of theirs. Yes, it should be a goal, but it is not a goal that they are ready to meet in 2009 or even 2010. So for their sake, I would hope that they don't do that. If they're going to move to Mondays, don't compete with Raw. You know, but how do you do that? Raw goes from 9 to 11. You're going to air Impact from 7 to 9? Probably not a smart idea. There really is no other prime time on Monday nights other than competing against Raw, at least for 1 hour, that makes sense for TNA. So that's what some people are speculating. And then there's other speculation that, what about Shane McMahon? It's oh so coincidental that this news comes so close after the news of Shane McMahon announcing his resignation from World Wrestling Entertainment. Again, let me put those flames out for all the conspiracy theorists out there. Anything is possible in this world. Perhaps Shane McMahon has signed with TNA. Anything is technically possible in this world. I could walk out of my front door right now and run into Samoa Joe, who is visiting Homicide here in Brooklyn. But what are the chances of that happening? Slim and none. Although it is Halloween. Perhaps somebody in a Samoa Joe mask will encounter me when I leave my home later, and that would be a little eerie. But anyway, point being, anything's possible, but I'm here to tell you it's not going to happen. Shane McMahon is not going to TNA. Shane McMahon has not signed a deal with TNA. If Shane McMahon had such a big falling out with his father, okay, which is what some rumors suggest, again, no reason to verify those rumors. I'm not saying he has certainly had arguments with Vince McMahon over the years and has been unhappy when some of his ideas have been knocked down. But if he had some humongous blow-up with Vince, hypothetically speaking, that led to this decision to leave WWE, why would he make the announcement so early and say, well, as of January 1st, I will no longer be with this company? That's not something that you do when you fly off the handle and make a rash decision like to quit your job. You give 2 weeks' notice. You don't give 3 months' notice. I don't think that that has anything to do with it. Whatever Shane is going to do is going to be independent of TNA. If it has anything to do with wrestling, if it has anything to do with MMA, maybe Shane is leaving to go start up a tech company or an IT firm. Nobody knows. But the Shane McMahon is going to TNA rumors have got to stop because it's just not going to happen. I would be nothing short of stunned if it happened because it would be such an FU to his dad. And why in the world would you leave WWE and such a high position, even if you weren't going to be given the book, so to speak? That, of course, will ultimately go to Stephanie. But why would you do that and go to TNA where everything is so fucked up? There is no real hierarchy. After the Jeff Jarrett fiasco, nobody seems to know who's in charge anymore at TNA. This is something that the TNA wrestlers have been complaining about for weeks now. AJ Styles, I talked about it last week, had a huge blow-up with Vince Russo after the pay-per-view, Bound for Glory, because he didn't like the way he was being booked as champion. He thought he was being made to look weak. Russo didn't have any answers for him as far as where he was going next. He thought, AJ did, that there would be some sort of program or pay-per-view match with Kurt Angle after that 20-minute draw they had on Impact, and that was the plan. And then Nigel McGuinness came in as Desmond Wolfe, and plans changed. Now, I'm not going to sit here and argue against the Kurt Angle and Nigel McGuinness match, but I can understand AJ Styles being a little PO'd about that. Speaking of Nigel, sucks to be him this week, you know. Nigel really was the big story last week for TNA, and he had a nice little debut, and this week on Impact, he laid out Kurt Angle with one of his infamous lariat clotheslines and actually had Kurt Angle stretchered out at the end of Impact, and that was supposed to be the end of the show, and then the Hulk Hogan stuff broke, and the show, they had a stick in the footage of the Hulk Hogan press conference, and that completely overshadowed everything. So if you're Nigel McGuinness this week, you're happy to be in TNA, you're happy to be in a main event level program with Kurt Angle, but you can't be very pleased with with Hulk Hogan, of all people, overshadowing you. Hopefully it's not an omen of things to come as it relates to the younger guys in TNA, although I wonder, after some of the comments that Hulk Hogan made to Time magazine this week, here's a quote from the article in Time. I'm not sure if it's in Time or on the Time website. It may be in the magazine as well, but the exact quote that Hulk had regarding TNA was, when I woke up and realized I should be my own man and be responsible for being happy, I realized I still have a lot to contribute to the wrestling business. And jumping into TNA and being a part of that company is huge. I have a chance to give back and help these young wrestlers who don't understand the business and the art form. So right away, he's knocking the TNA wrestlers You know, he's saying he wants to help, but they're flawed, is basically what he's saying. And I'm not even saying he's completely wrong. I'm just saying it's not going to endear him to the wrestlers that bust their ass in TNA every week to come in and say that you guys don't know what the fuck you're doing. You know, there was another interview that he did, and he commented on the fact that, you know, things progress in the wrestling industry way too quickly now. You know, back in the 80s, if he and Andre the Giant had a feud, it would build over 6 or 9 months. And these days, if Hulk Hogan and Andre the Giant were to kick off Monday Night Raw at 9 o'clock, their feud would culminate at 9:30. And it's a great analogy, and he's absolutely right. And there are a lot of things like that that really should change in the wrestling business. But that, you know, it's what Hulk does best. He takes kind of an element of truth and ends up blowing it into something just way out of proportion. And I have no doubt that Hulk Hogan's new book is likely like that, based on some of the accounts that I have read. I have not read the book yet myself, but people have. And this book apparently is not going to be all that different from his first book. And if you read his first book, you know what I'm talking about. But anyway, a lot of the TNA wrestlers now are they don't know what to make of it, quite frankly. Now, people in WWE, their reaction has been that Hulk Hogan and Eric Bischoff will essentially ruin TNA. It was something that got a lot of talk backstage at the SmackDown tapings on Tuesday. Nobody seemed overly concerned about it, but they all seemed to be pretty resigned to the fact that, you know, this would probably be bad news long-term for TNA. Somebody mentioned to me also that Vicky Guerrero apparently has her own Facebook page and wrote on there that Hulk can kiss my ass, he will use TNA as well. So apparently Vicky Guerrero has some sort of bad blood with Hulk Hogan. Maybe, you know, I know Eddie Guerrero is one of the people that was quite clearly held down in WCW for many years before he finally got his big release with, you know, Malenko and Saturn and Benoit back in 2000. And perhaps Eddie harbored some bad blood to the older guys like Hogan in WCW, and his wife, you know, agreed with it. I don't know where that bad blood with Vicky and Hulk comes from, but there you go. So this was the dominant wrestling story of the week. As you can tell, I spent 30 minutes talking about it, and there's going to be a lot more to talk about in the weeks to come. And like I said, there's a lot of news that has yet to be reported that is potentially even bigger than the story of Hulk Hogan joining TNA, and whether it has to do with new people coming in, if it has to do with a new TV show, if it has to do with competing with Raw on Monday nights, or Shane McMahon, ridiculous as that may be. I will cover it in depth here on the Sound Off, because this is a big story, and it's good in that it shakes things up a little bit, but just because you shake things up doesn't mean that when things settle down, they're going to be in a better position than they were before. For TNA's sake, I hope they are. Now, I want to talk about Bragging Rights and Raw real quick. Bragging Rights was quite a pay-per-view last weekend. I didn't pay for it, but I caught it. I'll leave that to your imagination. I did catch Bragging Rights. And I caught the entire Iron Man match between John Cena and Randy Orton. And if you followed me on my Twitter, I did some live blogging during the pay-per-view, which you missed out on. If you weren't a part of it, you can go to twitter.com/Solomonster. We're up over 330 followers now, and sign up for free to follow me there. But you'll know that I actually enjoyed this Iron Man match. I thought it was pretty damn good. It exceeded my expectations, much the way that the John Cena-Randy Orton submission match at Breaking Point exceeded my expectations. Their Hell in a Cell match was not so good, and a lot of their matches before have been not so good, and we've seen them so many times that I just got sick of seeing them. So if this, in fact, was the blow-off to Cena-Orton, which it appears to have been for now, although I don't believe at all that we have seen the last of John Cena versus Randy Orton. That is just a complete and total fabrication. It is not the last time we will ever see this match. These guys are too big and too young to never face each other again, and I'd be okay with that as long as they wait a couple of years. But anyway, this was billed as the final championship confrontation, by the way, that's the language they used, between John Cena and Randy Orton. It was an Iron Man match that went over 60 minutes. If you count all the rest periods and all that stuff, it was actually, I think, like 61 or something, but whatever. And where does it rank in terms of the other 5 or 6 Iron Man matches that WWE has had? It ranks at the bottom of the list, maybe not the very last, you know, maybe not at the very bottom, but it's definitely not at the top of the list. I mean, my favorite Iron Man match In terms of the match itself, has to be Kurt Angle and Brock Lesnar from SmackDown in 2003. There was not a lot of hijinks or anything. It was just a great fucking wrestling match between two of the best wrestlers in WWE at the time. And, you know, with a clean finish, and Brock won the belt back, and it was just the kind of match you don't see on television. It had the commercial breaks, which hurt it a little bit, because it wasn't a pay-per-view match, but Angle-Lesnar is still my favorite Iron Man match. My second favorite Iron Man match probably would be Triple H and The Rock, because they had, again, a better match than I thought they would have, and the ending is still one of my all-time favorite endings to any match. It was very overbooked, but The Undertaker's big comeback that night had the arena. I think they were in Kentucky. It was, I mean, the place exploded when Undertaker came out, and he was beating up the entire McMahon-Helmsley regime. And, you know, I believe Shawn Michaels was actually the special referee for that match. That was actually the debut of the American Badass Undertaker character, for the little trivia note for you there. But, and then, you know, Bret Hart and Shawn Michaels, obviously, with their classic Iron Man match, which I thought was a little boring at points, but overall was still a fantastic match. And even the Shawn Michaels-Kurt Angle 30-minute Iron Man match from Raw back in 05 was pretty damn great. So this one was not as good as those. This was not the best Iron Man match in WWE history by any stretch of the imagination. You know, John Cena, it wasn't an Iron Man match, but John Cena had a 55-minute classic with Shawn Michaels on Raw from the UK last year, or rather in 07. That, too, was much better than this Iron Man match. But still, I thought it was a pretty good match. It was laid out very awkwardly. They had Legacy run out only about 15 or 20 minutes into the match, and then they never came back because Kofi apparently chased them to the hotel with a steel chair. Okay. Anyway, we had a lot of going around the arena, and I will say the Falls Count Anywhere stipulation that was not announced in advance, I don't believe, was one of the best moves they could have made, because it added so much more to this match. The drama of going around the building, turning it into a big brawl. The stuff with the pyro on the stage I thought was really creative. It really was. And Randy Orton is just so great with his mannerisms and all of that. I mean, he's just top-notch in WWE. Him and Chris Jericho are just at the top of the list right now. And so they mixed in parts like that with some slower parts when Orton would have him in a chin lock, or Orton just beat the shit out of John Cena and left him laying for about 45 minutes out of the match. And of course, Cena, being who he is, managed to overcome the odds, and with 4 seconds left in the match, Orton tapped and lost the championship to John Cena. John Cena, it's worth noting, got busted open hard way by a monitor shot at the very beginning of the match. And we know the no blood edict in WWE, they're very strict with that, because I think part of it had to do with the fact that it was so early in the match, and they knew that they were going to be going into the crowd, and Pennsylvania, with the commission, is very strict about, you know, going into the crowd with blood, and on top of that is WWE's own policy. With Linda McMahon running for Senate, it's not the sort of thing they want to project on television, and so they sent people out there to basically super glue the wound shut. And for the most part, I think it opened up a little bit, but I was hopeful we'd have blood, and at the end of the day, we really didn't. And it was still a damn good match, but I just think it's so stupid. I mean, blood has been a part of wrestling for so many years. If somebody gets busted open by accident, even if it's not an accident, but it's not intended, just go with it. It just adds so much to the match. But anyway, I thought that was interesting, and it was just a very good match. I enjoyed it. I was not bored by it. I read people sending in reviews to SC Scoops and other wrestling websites saying the match was so boring. I kept looking at the clock. You know, I look at the clock when I watch Raw every Monday night, and I say to myself, God damn, is this show not over yet? I can't believe how long the show is. I can honestly say that watching this match, I only looked at the clock that they gave me on the screen. I didn't look at my watch. I didn't look at my BlackBerry. The hour just passed, and dare I say, I was hoping that it would go on for a couple of more minutes. I was hoping we would get an overtime, and I didn't think I would feel that way going into it. So my hat's off to the two of them. They had a good match. It wasn't, you know, the best match ever by any means. I just fucking hate it when the announcers do that, and I know they're only doing what they're told. But you got Michael Cole. It's bad enough Jim Ross isn't there, you know? You've got Michael Cole and Todd Grisham and Jerry Lawler, who should know better, but you got these three guys who are having to tell us They can't let us think that on our own. They have to tell us that we've just seen an all-time classic. They have to tell us that we've seen one of the greatest matches ever in all of eternity. And it just gives me goosebumps. It makes my skin crawl. No, that was not even close to being the greatest match I've ever seen. I thought it was pretty good, but thank you guys. Now you made me pissed off. You know, these announcers are just, oh, God. Like I said, they're in a tough position because they're only doing what they're told in their ear. But goddamn, man, just let your announcers call the friggin' match. Anyway, bragging rights meant nothing as far as the trophy, Raw vs. SmackDown. Who gives a shit? Nobody gives a shit. I guarantee that nobody listening to this podcast gives one shit whether Raw won or SmackDown won, because what is bragging rights anyway? I mean, John Cena won the WWE Championship, and he comes out on Raw the next night, and he says, I'm not going to brag, or I'm not here to brag. Didn't you just win the title at a pay-per-view called Bragging Rights? What do you mean you're not here to brag? That was me, I'd be bragging all night. Let's get to Raw. Chris Jericho is in love with his SmackDown trophy, and of course, I think this is fantastic because Chris Jericho is great, and anything he does is hilarious, and I just, you know, Jericho taking all the credit for the victory and bringing the trophy around like it was his newborn child, I thought was fantastic. We find out that Big Show, who turned on Team Raw at the pay-per-view and helped SmackDown win, has been rewarded for his efforts by being granted a world championship match on SmackDown, even though he's a Raw guy. You're following me here? He's a Raw guy, but he's getting a SmackDown world title match against The Undertaker at Survivor Series. Well, there's a match I've never seen before. Chris Jericho obviously is not very happy with this. He feels that he should be in line for a title match because he was the captain of Team SmackDown, and therefore his team won. He should get a title shot. And I thought to myself, well, at least that would be a fresh match. We have never, ever seen a Chris Jericho one-on-one match against The Undertaker. Some people were thinking maybe that would be a WrestleMania match, even though it will not be. But I thought, well, that would be pretty good. I mean, the outcome would pretty much be predetermined. I don't see Jericho losing to The Undertaker, but so what? In any event, we would find out on SmackDown that Jericho ended up getting added to the match anyway, after he beat Kane on SmackDown, and so it will now be a triple threat match with Undertaker, Big Show, and Chris Jericho. Fine. Let's look at Raw for a second now. With Randy Orton out of the picture, you ask yourself, who is in line now to get a world championship match? This is how thin the Raw roster is. There really is not anybody else, unless you're going to break up DX for a little bit and put Shawn Michaels or Triple H in a title match against Cena, that really makes sense. It would be nice if they took one of the mid to upper mid-card guys and gave him that extra push to really try to cement them as a main eventer, like a Kofi Kingston or a Jack Swagger. I'd say The Miz, because he is in fact awesome, but The Miz already got jobbed out by Cena, so I really think he should stay away from him for a while. And they teased that throughout the night. Not only did they tease it, but they had John Cena come out. And mind you, they built up the fact that John Cena, had he lost the Iron Man match, would have been off Raw forever, okay? He would have been forced to leave Raw and go to SmackDown. And so this was built up over so many weeks, you know, all of 2 or 3 weeks that they had between pay-per-views. And they start the show out, and they don't even mention the fact, maybe I missed it, but they didn't even mention the fact that John Cena had won. If they mentioned it, it was a fleeting mention. They did not make a big deal out of it at all. It wasn't until the middle of the show that Cena came out, and they're like, oh yeah, John Cena won the belt back, and he's on Raw. And I thought to myself, wow, that was really important, I guess, you know, that big stipulation there. But anyway, John Cena comes out. He's called out by Legacy, Cody Rhodes and Ted DiBiase. And they say that they will get a title match. They want a title match with John Cena so they can bring the belt back to Legacy. And I thought to myself, no, because for whatever reason, just by Legacy being linked with John Cena through the feud with Randy Orton, it doesn't seem fresh to me. I guess looking at it, a singles match with Ted DiBiase, who is probably going babyface any week now, with his DVD movie coming out next month, you know, a DiBiase-Cena singles match wouldn't be the worst thing in the world, but again, I don't want to see Cena with Legacy. I just want them to be separate at this point. So I was happy when John Cena said no. You're not going to get a title match, although he basically buried these two guys. These two guys they've been trying to build them up as main event level guys. They even had them beat Shawn Michaels at Breaking Point. But apparently, according to John Cena, Legacy has not earned a title shot. They've done nothing to earn a title opportunity. So much for that big Legacy push over the last couple of months. So they're out of the running, and you start asking yourself, wow, are they really going to give somebody like a Jack Swagger, for example, or MVP, turn him heel maybe, where I think he works better, and give them a title match? Well, it wouldn't take very long to find out the answer to that question. Now, here's where the ironic part comes into play. John Cena comes out, and his whole promo is predicated on talking about the fact that we need new guys and fresh faces on top. It's the same old guys every single week, every single month. And I thought to myself, wow, it's a worked shoot that we're seeing here from John Cena. And maybe they actually understand that it's the same guys and the same faces, and it's very stale, and maybe they're really going to give us somebody new. Maybe they shifted over somebody from another brand. And I even posted this on my Twitter page, and I said, wouldn't it be something if they took their heads out of their asses and they took Christian out of the abyss that is ECW and turned him heel in one fell swoop and just had him show up on Raw and beat the piss out of John Cena? And we got that John Cena-Christian feud for the title that we didn't get all those years ago. And Christian works so much better as a heel anyway. And he's so awesome in the ring. The matches would be nothing short of great. It would put Christian right in the main event mix on the top show and get him off ECW, and it would be fantastic. And then I remembered that Christian is the ECW champion, and they were promoting a big match that week with him and Yoshitatsu, which was excellent, by the way. And I realized that's probably not going to happen, and it didn't. Instead, what we got was an announcement at the end of the show that the big fresh match that we're going to get at the Survivor Series is a triple threat match with John Cena defending the title against Triple H and Shawn Michaels. Yes, that after all that talk about needing fresh faces, they give us Shawn Michaels and Triple H. Now, I will admit, when the announcement was first made, I thought to myself, let's look at the positive side here. It is fresh in the respect that we will have Michaels and Triple H in a match essentially where they are against each other, therefore creating possible tension in the ranks of DX, which perhaps will pave the way for a Triple H heel turn, because I don't think Shawn Michaels will ever again go heel in his career. He's only got a couple of years left, and I know he prefers to work babyface, and so I just don't see that happening, even though it would be great. And I thought, okay, it reminded me in a way of the Survivor Series 10 years ago, where there was another huge triple threat match announced that actually never happened. It was supposed to be Triple H defending the WWF title against Stone Cold Steve Austin and The Rock. And the match didn't happen because Austin's neck, of course, was fucked. And they did the angle that night where he got run over by a car and he was gone for the next 9 months. And they put Big Show, ironically, another new face. They put Big Show in Austin's place, and as a kind of a make-good to the fans who probably felt pretty screwed that night, they had Big Show go over and win the belt, and of course he lost it back to Triple H on Raw like 3 weeks later, like a month and a half later. Anyway, that was the only positive I saw in it, and the more I thought about it, the more I realized, Solomonster, this is not fresh. Yes, I talk about myself in the third person, by the way. Solomonster, this is not fresh. You're trying to paint... You know, you're looking at this through rose-colored glasses, and that's not why I do the sound-off. I do the sound-off just for the opposite, so I can rant and rave when they do stupid shit. And this is pretty goddamn stupid. If you're going to go on your own TV show and talk about and point fun at yourself and talk about the fact that you never have any new guys in the main event, and you go out there and you put the same three fucking guys in the main event, I should say three of the six. It's pretty much always the same six or seven people. It's always John Cena, Randy Orton, Shawn Michaels, Triple H, Big Show, and Batista. I will not put Chris Jericho in there because Chris Jericho was actually great. And therefore, I am okay with Chris Jericho being in main events. But even Chris Jericho, I admit, wouldn't exactly be fresh. Batista gets title shots every month. I mean, it's just ridiculous. You could probably put Undertaker in there too when he's not hurt. Anyway, so now Raw and SmackDown are doing the exact same storyline on both shows. They both have triple threat title matches that involve a tag team that they will now promote dissension between. This is how creative the creative team really is. They have to run identical angles on the same pay-per-view for both shows. So that's pretty stupid. So that really kind of was a dour way to end Raw. It was really stupid. you know, the NASCAR guys were just unbelievably horrible. I mean, obviously, everyone gets a script because that's how they do things. Everything is scripted. But it's rare that I hear a promo where you feel like you're reading the script. You know, obviously, these guys are not entertainers the way that the wrestlers are, so you got to cut them some slack. But, I mean, they should pre-screen these people before they put them on TV. I mean, Bob Barker just knocked... I mean, just compared to these guys, I mean, Bob Barker is the greatest thing since sliced bread. But again, he's a TV personality. Why put these guys out there? I mean, one of them, the 19-year-old kid, for crying out loud, I think it was Joey Logano, I mean, just horrible. Absolutely horrible. But, I mean, at least they popped for the cheap heat. You know, Kyle Busch played heel there and said that, you know, the city hadn't had a championship since Hulkamania. And I thought that was funny looking back on it, considering the Hulkamania announcement that was made less than 24 hours later. Come to think of it, if you paid any attention to Jerry Lawler at the beginning of Raw, I don't know how many people noticed this, but at the very beginning of the show when Chris Jericho and Big Show came out, they were talking about Big Show turning on his teammates at Bragging Rights, and Lawler, I'm sorry, it was Michael Cole who was talking about Big Show basically being a Judas and Benedict Arnold, and he called him Brutus, who slayed Caesar, and Jerry Lawler's response to that was, Brutus Beefcake? And again, not saying he's coming to TNA, but just considering the announcement with Hogan that was made the next day, I don't know that we'll be getting too many Brutus Beefcake or Hulkamania references on TV very much anymore. Although Hulk Hogan has a DVD coming out, and apparently it's in production, so Vince McMahon cannot cancel the DVD like he canceled the Sting DVD and all that, and canceled the Randy Savage DVD once upon a time before they brought it back. The Hogan DVD is coming out, and I saw the track listing for it, and it actually looks pretty cool because there's a lot of matches on there that have never been released before. And it's tough for WWE because they put out so many DVDs, and you only have so many matches, really, to fresh matches, TV matches, to put on these things, that a lot of DVD sets have repetitive matches. And this one actually has a lot of classic matches that have never been released before on DVD, so it looks like a pretty good pickup if you're interested in picking up a Hulk Hogan DVD next month. Last thing I want to talk about with respect to Bragging Rights and WWE TV this week was the Batista heel turn. Batista turn heel. Anybody with a brain should have seen this coming. I've been talking about Batista supposed to be turning heel for just months on this podcast now because he was. He was supposed to turn heel at the beginning of the year and have that second match with John Cena, but surprise, surprise, Batista got hurt. So he finally turns heel, and I will say the feed that I was watching of the pay-per-view went out briefly during the World Championship match. I missed the post-match stuff, so I didn't actually see the Batista heel turn in real time. So I read reviews from people online about what they thought of it, and most people, actually I won't say most people, it was pretty much split half and half. Some people thought it was fantastic, other people thought it was lame. And I started thinking, wow, I'm reading a description of how it happened, and it sounded lame. And I said, this has been a heel turn just months, if not years, in the making here, and it sounds like they botched it. And I finally went and saw it, and I thought it was great, because Dave is an interesting performer, Big Dave is. He's very laid back, Batista is. It's almost like he's the scariest kind of monster you could imagine, because you'll have the prototypical wrestling monster who will come out there, and he'll look real mean and tough, and he'll snort, and he'll spit, and he'll rant, and he'll rave, and you know what you're getting. But with Batista, he's a big guy that, you know, if you met him in a dark alley, you certainly wouldn't want to run into him if you were alone. And he smiles a lot, and he smirks, and he talks very low, and he's got this very calming voice. And then he just explodes and just rips your head off. And I love that. And Batista obviously felt like he got fucked over by Ray. And Josh Matthews is interviewing him, and Dave is still a little loopy from the tombstone. And he heard Ray basically telling the fans, you know, we tried, you know, or we were close, but we couldn't get the job done. And Dave basically goes, we were close. He goes, you know, ask the fans, do you think we were close? And Dave says, I don't think we were close. He goes, I think I was close. And he goes, you know what? I'm tired of my best friend stabbing me in the back. And he goes, I'm going to rip your head off. Oh, actually, I'm sorry, even before that. And this is what I thought was great about it, because a lot of times when guys are doing promos and they're speaking on WWE television, it's so scripted and so rehearsed, it doesn't sound like anything anybody would ever say in their life. And what I love about Dave in this instance was, before he beat the hell out of Ray, he goes, "You think I'm playing?" He goes, "Ray, I'm not playing." And it's think about it. I mean, if you ever got in a fight with your friend did something to piss you off, and it just really made you angry, and he was on you and on you and on you, and you said, "Look, I'm not playing around, man. Stop fucking around. I'm not playing around with you." I could see people saying that. That's realistic enough. You know, and here's Dave, who just got screwed out of the championship, saying, "Ray, I'm not playing around. I'm going to rip your head off." And Ray, of course, like a moron, is standing there with this look on his face like he just farted. And Dave comes out of nowhere and follows through on his threat and beats the hell out of Rey Mysterio. Now, I thought it looked kind of corny for Batista to grab Ray and start shouting about, "I thought you were my friend." That was a little weird. But he certainly beat the hell out of Rey Mysterio, and I thought that was a great heel turn, just because it was executed in a way that maybe if somebody other than Batista did it, it wouldn't have worked. But the way that he did it, it worked, and I liked it. And it's about time. Although I will say, SmackDown now is in dire need of another top babyface. You know, Jeff Hardy is gone, Batista's a heel, Undertaker isn't even on every show, and he's been hurting. Punk is a heel. John Morrison is not quite a main eventer yet. Big Show, who I guess is not even technically a SmackDown guy, is a heel. Chris Jericho is a heel. Matt Hardy is not a main eventer. So they've got some issues to deal with on Friday nights. But that's those are my thoughts on WWE television over the past week. Now, one other little news note here. Regarding The Undertaker, and I will give credit for this to Mike Johnson of PW Insider, talked about this on one of his audio hotlines this weekend so far, which I thought was really interesting. We've heard about some upcoming WWE Films projects. You know, Big Show has his first movie that he's working on with WWE Films called Knucklehead. Originally it was titled Sucker Punch, now it's Knucklehead. And the premise of it sounds great, because for years I've said Big Show should be in a comedy. I've said this for years. In fact, I said this when Kurt Angle was still in WWE, and you may recall many, many years ago, this would have been back in like 03 or 04, Angle and Big Show were, at least briefly, they had like a little alliance with Paul Heyman, I think, managing both of them, and I thought, man, Kurt Angle and Big Show in like a buddy cop movie would be gold. It's not quite a buddy cop movie, but Big Show in a comedy can do no wrong. I'm looking forward to that. And John Cena has another movie coming out. This one I'm not looking forward to, where, ironically, I believe he plays a wrestler, which is a big departure for him. I don't even think he is the title role. He's not the lead. I think the lead will be played by the younger version of himself, and they're looking for a kid to play the part. I think it's called Brother's Keeper. And so he'll be filming that in the next, I believe early December, maybe, is when they start filming that. So he may have to miss some... I don't think he'll be doing house shows, come to think of it, for December into January while he does the movie. Anyway, this movie project involves somebody who I just never really think of much as being a leading man in a WWE film. It involves The Undertaker. Apparently they're developing a project for him. They have a producer. They don't have a writer or a director yet. So this is still in the very early stages of development. But Mike Johnson reports that it's for The Undertaker, and it would apparently be a Western set in the late 1800s. And not only would it be a Western set in the late 1800s starring The Undertaker, but it would be something of an origin story for The Undertaker character, much the way that you may recall a couple of years ago WWE released a fiction novel called Journey into Darkness, which was done in part to give Kane a clear-cut backstory. I did not read the book. I was told not to. It was crap. If anybody read the book and thought otherwise, please write in and give me your book thoughts. But apparently it was not a great book. It was very hard to follow. But they tried to give the Kane character a background in written story form. So in this case, they would be giving... And I don't know that this is the whole premise of the movie, but the movie would be something of an origin story for The Undertaker's wrestling character, which I think could be really, really cool. I know that, and Mike Johnson mentioned this as well in the report, but I remember hearing that was the original concept for The Undertaker character when he came into WWE in 1990. You know, Undertaker's told the story, got the call from Vince McMahon saying, you know, Undertaker picked up the phone and all he heard on the other end of the line was some guy saying, "Or is this my Undertaker?" And I guess Undertaker recognized the voice and he's like, "I'm your Undertaker," and kind of went from there. And with the whole long trench coat and the whole look, the kind of the grizzled look that Undertaker had when he first came in, he wasn't supposed to be this paranormal dead man walking. He was supposed to be the spitting image of this grizzled Western-looking guy from the 1800s. Kind of a badass character, which he would end up playing many, many years later in WWE. So who knows how different the Undertaker character would have been if that's the direction that it would have gone in full bore in the early 90s. Obviously, there was something of a departure from that. But this movie would help explain the origins of the character from the perspective of being some sort of Western badass. So I guess this is sort of the Undertaker's opportunity to play Clint Eastwood in this movie, which or maybe even John Wayne, which I know Jim Ross would love because he's a huge fan of the Duke. So I think it's a very interesting concept. It's too early to... There's no script yet. Nobody knows much beyond that, but could sign me up. I mean, it would probably be a DVD release. Supposedly, it has a budget of $4 million, which these days is not a big budget at all for a movie to have. It's not going to be a theatrical release at all, but certainly sounds interesting. I will say that much. Speaking of Jim Ross, just a quick aside here. Not too much new to report on Jim Ross's physical condition. He is off the road. There's no timetable for when he will come back to WWE. In the meantime, Matt Stryker has been moved over to SmackDown full-time to replace Jim Ross. He'll be working with Todd Grisham. Byron Saxton is the new color guy on ECW with Josh Matthews. He came up from FCW. I didn't see him on Tuesday, so I can't vouch for how good or bad he is. But, you always worry that if these new teams gel, Jim Ross may be not without a job, because WWE does want to re-sign him. His contract is up in December, and if Jim Ross is not going to be announcing, they'll find other things for him to do. But I don't want Jim Ross to not announce, because that's what he's good at. And hopefully there'll be a spot for him when he comes back. And he'll be able to recover, hopefully, well enough to come back. Apparently his face is still droopy. He's having a lot of trouble with his right eye, the vision in his right eye. And they're trying to protect the retina as much as possible. But the good news that he reported on his blog is that he had tests done to determine whether or not he had multiple sclerosis, and apparently he does not. And that is very, very, very good news. So, JR seems to be doing fine. You know, he's doing blogs, and he's going to OU football games, and he's got his restaurant, but he's not TV ready to go back to work, and they're still doing tests to determine what the hell is going on with Jim Ross to make sure that there's no underlying problem here. They've done tests on his brain and all that sort of thing, and he's still waiting for the results of that. So let's keep our fingers crossed for Jim Ross, because I will say that if one thing was apparent to me at the Bragging Rights pay-per-view, it was how much they missed having Jim Ross there. I thought the announcers did a good job without him. They didn't do poorly, although there were a lot of things that annoyed me more so during the Iron Man match, but I don't know that Jim Ross would have been doing the Iron Man match anyway, even if he was there, because he's a SmackDown announcer. So it was what it was, but let's hope JR can come back real soon. Ozzy and Sharon Osbourne are going to be co-hosting Monday Night Raw this Monday night in Worcester, Massachusetts. That should be interesting. I hope the censors are working that night. Rumors that Rowdy Roddy Piper may be guest hosting Raw on November 16th from Madison Square Garden. I certainly would like to see Hot Rod. I will be live at that Raw show that night. And it would be kind of cool. I actually got to see Hot Rod at Madison Square Garden last year when he made a surprise appearance in the Royal Rumble. And I remember thinking that night when he was in the ring in the Rumble match with Jimmy Snuka, I remember thinking to myself, as morbid as this sounds, this could be the final time I ever get to see Roddy Piper live and in person. And so perhaps that will not be true if he co-hosts Raw, if he hosts, I should say, Raw on the 16th. Hulk Hogan mentioned, by the way, in the interviews that he had done this past week, he was on Howard Stern, and he mentioned that Vince McMahon had offered him the invitation to host Raw on November 16th. I'm kind of pissed off about that. Obviously, that will not be happening now. But Roddy Piper would be a good consolation prize, I would think. Although, last I had heard, they were working on another name. And if that name did not work out, Roddy Piper would be the replacement. So if you think of a name, I would imagine it would be a name as comparable to Piper or bigger. I don't want to speculate. Maybe it's a celebrity and not a wrestler, I don't know. But if that doesn't work out, Roddy Piper may host Raw at MSG, and I think that would be kind of cool. Speaking of legends, Mick Foley is taking his stand-up comedy routine on the road. He and Colt Cabana, of Ring of Honor fame, will be doing stand-up comedy acts during the, I guess they're calling it the Total Extreme Comedy show. And they're bringing it to a couple of different places, one of which is the Gotham Comedy Club in Manhattan here in New York City this Monday, November 2nd, and I have my ticket. I will be going to the Mick Foley stand-up comedy show at the Gotham Comedy Club on Monday night. So I will be missing Raw this week. I don't have DVR, so I'm sure I'll catch clips and whatnot online after the fact, but I will not be able to watch Raw in full this Monday. Just a quick warning to those of you who love my Raw recaps on Sound Off. There may not be one next week, but I will be doing something wrestling related. I will be supporting the wrestlers. I will be supporting Mick Foley and Colt Cabana in their stand-up comedy efforts on Monday night, and that should be a lot of fun. I'm looking forward to that. So that's going to do it. No mailbag this week. I this Hogan TNA stuff. I went way overboard, way over time this week, over an hour. So keep those questions coming. I believe I've responded to most, if not everybody, directly in email anyway. And if you have any other new questions, send them into thesolemonster@gmail.com. And I'm sure the mailbag will be back as normal next week. Follow me on Twitter at twitter.com/solemonster. I'll tell you what, now more so than ever, with all this breaking news, and again, there's still big TNA news yet to come. And if it breaks, you could probably go to sescoops.com and see it, but you may hear it first on the Twitter page, so you'll want to log up there and follow me. It doesn't cost you anything. And another warning here, I don't believe this episode of The Sound Off will be available on iTunes, at least not today. Maybe I can get it up there in a couple of days. That suspension is for going over the bandwidth a couple of weeks ago, I think, expires tomorrow as of November 1st, so maybe I'll be able to get it up then. But for now, just download the podcast through scscoops.com like everybody else, and you should be good to go. So, on that note, it's going to take care of a news-packed edition of The Sound Off. If you're going out for Halloween, do stay safe and have fun, but stay safe. I know a lot of people go out and they have fun, they drink and all that, and I'll probably be doing a lot of that myself tonight, but I'm not driving. And even so, I'm mindful of what's going on around me, and just be smart, have fun. As many of you know, I will be going out tonight as the, I'll be going out as the champ. Let's just put it that way. I'm going against everything I believe in by doing this, but it wouldn't be Halloween without going out and making a complete ass out of yourself and just making it fun for everybody involved. So if you happen to be parading around in Midtown Manhattan tonight, and you see the spinner belt over somebody's shoulder, may well be the Solemonster. So, anyway, have fun, enjoy Halloween. We'll be back with episode 89 next week. Until then, be well, stay safe, take care, guys.
You've been listening to the Solemonster.
You know, I really just don't understand what they're doing.
Anybody agree with me out there?
I mean, anybody. Come on, throw me a bone here.
Probably the single dumbest thing I've ever seen in my entire life.
God, I love this business.
On SE Scoops.